everybody. Welcome back to the Biographics Podcast. I'm Simon, and this episode today originally aired on our YouTube channel. If you like it, please do consider heading over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leaving us a rating and or a review. 5 stars or whatever is always preferred, but do be honest. Let us know how we're doing. Really do appreciate it. And let's get into today's episode.
There are few historical figures whose name evokes more dread than that of Blackbeard the Pirate. Undoubtedly the most infamous man to emerge out of the golden age of piracy of the late 17th and early 18th century, Blackbeard has far transcended all of his cohorts and has become not only an archetype for the villainous pirate captain, but a pop culture figure who is still present in our movies, TV shows, books, and video games. There were other more successful pirates. Bartholomew Roberts, aka Black Bart, may have been the most triumphant corsair from the golden age of piracy, capturing an estimated 400 ships during his career. Henry Avery, dubbed the King of All Pirates, took one massive prize and managed to disappear forever, actually getting to enjoy the riches that he had plundered. Ching Shi, a female pirate who prowled the South China Sea, commanded a giant army of tens of thousands of men. And yet, it is Blackbeard that everyone knows and everyone fears. But what was it about this larger-than-life figure that made him stand head and shoulders above his contemporaries? Well, today we try to find that out as we explore the life of the dreadful pirate, Blackbeard. Right off the bat, there is a problem with trying to tell the story of Blackbeard, one which is shared with pretty much every other pirate of his time, and that's a lack of contemporary sources. Blackbeard might be the most famous corsair in history, but we know shockingly little about his life before he raised the black flag. The main source we have for Blackbeard's life, and indeed for many of his ilk, is a book originally published in 1724 by one Captain Charles Johnson. It went by several very, very long names, as it was reprinted in multiple editions, but it is typically known as A General History of the Pirates. It's a fascinating read, and it certainly has a lot of juicy stories, but the way it presents its characters in a somewhat mythical way makes historians think it might contain its fair share of fabulations, not just facts. Fittingly, even the author is a mystery to us. So little is known of Captain Charles Johnson that people have usually assumed it is a pseudonym. Since 1932, when the idea was first proposed by writer John Robert Moore, many people have been convinced that Charles Johnson was an alias of Daniel Defoe, the English author best known for his novel Robinson Crusoe. Or it is possible that Charles Johnson never really existed and was simply an amalgam of anonymous authors who all contributed different biographies. Given that Blackbeard was in his late 30s and early 40s when he died in 1718, he must have been born sometime around 1680, presumably in Bristol. The name he used most often during his pirate career was Edward Teach, or sometimes Thatch, with various spellings of each incarnation. Truth be told, pirates often used aliases, so we cannot even say with certainty that either one of these was his real name. It is a bit irrelevant, though, because everyone just came to know him by the sobriquet Blackbeard. At that time, Bristol was a major international port, particularly active in the slave trade across the Atlantic. Therefore, it is almost certain that Teach started serving aboard a ship from an early age, and some historians believe that he came from a respectable family and had a good education. According to Captain Johnson, before turning to piracy, Teach operated as a privateer out of Jamaica during the Anglo-French War of the early 18th century, which itself was part of the larger conflict known as the War of Spanish Succession. Specifically, Teach may have been active in the American theater known as Queen Anne's War, where British colonists fought the French and the Spanish. This is bolstered by the fact that when he finally captained his own ship, Teach renamed it to the Queen Anne's Revenge. In case you ever wondered what the difference between a pirate and a privateer was, we might as well clear that up now. While a pirate was a criminal who operated mostly on a free-for-all basis and attacked whatever ship caught his fancy, a privateer was more like a private contractor under the service of his government during wartime. He received a commission known as a letter of marque and was only allowed to target ships belonging to the enemy, and he had to give a percentage of the spoils to the government. The problem was was that once the war was over, privateers were supposed to stop attacking ships. However, by that time, most of them had already developed a bit of a taste for it, and they didn't really have any other marketable skills, so many of them just decided to become pirates. While we're at it, let's cover two more similar terms, corsair and buccaneer. A corsair was an English term used to refer to foreign privateers, and it was intended as an insult. Meanwhile, buccaneers were a specific group of pirates from the Caribbean who started out as hunters on islands such as Tortuga and Hispaniola. They preyed on boar and cattle and sold the smoked meat to passing ships, and in French, the meat was known as viande bouchonnée. Because they were tough, skilled hunters, the buccaneers soon realized that it was easier for them to simply attack the ships which docked on their islands, and soon enough they gained a fearsome reputation and were in demand by all pirate and privateer ships. The story of Blackbeard starts in earnest in 1716, when he took up piracy. You might be surprised to learn that his career only lasted a little over 2 years, but it was enough for his infamy to spread and grow to the point where he is still a fearsome character some 300 years later. Teach was somewhat successful as a privateer. Captain Johnson mentioned that he often distinguished himself for his uncommon boldness and personal courage, but specified that he was never given command of a ship. Then he became faced with the same problem as all other privateers. In 1713, following the signing of the Treaty of Utrecht, the war ended. Teach no longer had the backing of the British government to prey on Spanish and French ships, so inevitably he turned to piracy. Sometime between 1713 and 1716, Edward Teach left Jamaica for New Providence, an island which proved to be an ideal headquarters for pirates. Although it once had colonists, it had been abandoned following numerous Spanish and French attacks during the war. Even though they were badly damaged, the island still had multiple structures, including a fort, so the pirates didn't have to start from scratch. Whilst in New Providence, Teach joined the crew of another famed pirate of that time, Captain Benjamin Hornigold. Hornigold's notoriety would increase in just a couple of years when he would accept a pardon from the British government and become a pirate hunter tasked with bringing down the same men he once sailed with, Blackbeard included. For the time being, however, the two had a strong relationship. Hornigold had been impressed with Teach's nautical skills and gave him his first commands of a ship they captured. It was only a sloop of war, which was a small ship with only two or three masts, but it was a start. The beginning of 1717 was a fruitful period for Teach. Alongside Hornigold, he sailed to mainland America around the coast of Virginia, and together they took several prizes. First, there was a ship coming in from Havana, which had 120 barrels of flour. Then, another sloop from Bermuda, which was carrying wine. And lastly, a ship traveling from Madeira in Portugal to South Carolina. After they had enough prowling the waters off the American coast, the pirates headed back to the West Indies in the fall. In November, they captured a French Guineaman called La Concorde, which had left Nantes and was headed for the island of Martinique. A Guineaman was a large cargo ship intended specifically for the transport of slaves. According to a report given by the ship's French captain Pierre Dosset, La Concorde had 16 cannons and 75 crewmen and was carrying over 500 slaves and around 20 pounds of gold dust. However, their voyage across the Atlantic was long and arduous, and by the time they encountered pirates, they had already lost 16 crewmen and 61 slaves, not to mention the fact that another 36 crewmen were stricken ill with scurvy and dysentery. When they met Teach about 100 miles away from Martinique, the French had little resistance to offer, especially as the two pirate ships had a combined might of 150 men and 20 cannons. After two volleys fired at La Concorde, Captain Dosset surrendered the vessel. Afterwards, the pirates sailed the ships to the nearby island of Béchouia, where they dropped almost everyone on the shore. A few of the French crewmen joined up with the pirates voluntarily, while several useful members, such as surgeons, carpenters, and a cook, were press-ganged into service. Teach preferred this new, larger ship to his old, tiny sloop, so he left that one behind with the French sailors and took La Concorde. The French had little say in the matter, so they accepted the new vessel, which they renamed Mauvais Rencontre, or Bad Encounter. As for La Concorde, with Hornigold's permission, Teach captained it and turned it into his flagship, renaming it the Queen Anne's Revenge. We already mentioned that this name came from Teach serving in Queen Anne's War, but it is also possible that he was a Jacobite, a person who wanted to restore the House of Stuart to the throne of Great Britain instead of the House of Hanover. Queen Anne was the last monarch from the House of Stuart who had passed away in 1714. Now Teach had a ship that matched his ambitions, and he was ready for the world to get to know and fear the name Blackbeard. He spent the next year prowling up and down the islands of the Caribbean, taking prizes wherever possible. This included a large vessel called the Great Allen, which the pirates plundered and destroyed, as well as a sloop called the Adventure, which Blackbeard kept and added to his fleet, captained by his sailing master, a pirate called Israel Hans. Near Barbados, the Queen Anne's Revenge engaged in a naval battle with a powerful man of war named the HMS Scarborough. Even though the other ship was bombed with 30 cannons, the Queen Anne's Revenge proved to be more than a match for it, and after several hours of fighting, the Scarborough disengaged and retreated to Barbados. Benjamin Hornigold and his ship, the Ranger, were present for some of the plunders. It's not exactly clear when he and Blackbeard parted ways, but in January 1718, he traveled to Jamaica to accept the king's pardon and become a pirate hunter. During this time, Blackbeard also made the acquaintance of another close associate, one who merits inclusion just because he is unique in pirate lore, Stede Bonnet. When exactly the two met varies based on the source. Some say that Teach and Hornigold first ran into Bonnet while they were plundering the coast of America, while Captain Johnson specified that Blackbeard met the other pirate captain after acquiring the Queen Anne's Revenge. What made Stede Bonnet truly special was that he seemingly had it all, yet gave it all away to become a pirate. He was a wealthy, respectable landowner with a sugar plantation in Barbados. Even so, he borrowed money to buy and outfit a ship and secure a crew, and then he left his past life behind and raised the black flag. We can only speculate as to his motivation. Maybe he went through an extreme midlife crisis, or maybe he was just really, really bored and wanted some adventure. Contemporary accounts suggest that Bonnet suffered some discomforts he found in the married state. However, becoming a pirate just to get away from a nagging wife seems a tad extreme to historians who argue that Bonnet may have actually been mentally unstable. Whatever the reason, Stede Bonnet became a pirate captain, even though he had no knowledge of sailing. Teach picked up on this pretty quick when the two met, and he used it to his advantage in order to add another ship to his command. Bonnet's men were perfectly happy sailing under the mighty Blackbeard instead of an inexperienced captain. Bonnet was recovering from an injury and was made a permanent guest aboard the Queen Anne's Revenge, while one of Teach's men, the first mate named Richards, captained Bonnet's ship, the Revenge. Of course, in this case, permanent guest was just a polite way of saying prisoner, and it's hard to know what would have happened if Bonnet tried to forcefully regain command of his ship. This was never the case, however, as the gentleman pirate, as he was sometimes called, seemed content sailing alongside Blackbeard and just being along for the ride. Eventually, Blackbeard fully betrayed Bonnet when the captain decided that he had too many ships in his fleet. He stripped the Revenge of loot and supplies and beached it, almost marooning most of its crew on a sandbar. To his credit, Bonnet did learn a thing or two about being a pirate while sailing with Teach. He was able to get the Revenge seaworthy again, secured a crew, and went in pursuit of his treacherous former companion. It would have been interesting to get a final confrontation between these two and see who came out on top. Alas, Bonnet never met Blackbeard again. Instead, he was caught and arrested, and after numerous delays, he was hanged for piracy. On the bright side, for us at least, Bonnet's trial transcript became an important source for a big chunk of Blackbeard's career. The first half of 1718 saw Blackbeard at the height of his power. He took prize after prize with little to no opposition because his fleet was mighty enough that no single ship stood a chance against them, but also because people began fearing the name Blackbeard. If Teach was good at anything, it was cultivating a menacing reputation for himself, which sent chills down everyone's spine and made ship captains surrender before there was any need for actual combat. Physically, Teach was an imposing man. He was described as being tall, with wide shoulders, and obviously had a very long, dark beard. He wore a sling over both shoulders, which contained braces for 6 pistols that he held across his chest like bandoliers. Allegedly, he was in the habit of taking long, slow-burning fuses, lighting them and tucking them under his hat so that little wisps of smoke would form around his head, giving him an otherworldly, frightening appearance. Curiously, Teach also apparently liked to take his long beard and braid it into pigtails tied off with colored ribbons. Doesn't exactly sound particularly terrifying, but I guess people were a lot easier to scare 300 years ago. Whatever he did, it worked, and most ships were ready to surrender as soon as they saw Blackbeard's flag. Speaking of which, well, what was Blackbeard's flag exactly? Well, that's a hard question to answer. There is one design which has been associated with the pirate for a long time. It features a horn skeleton holding an hourglass in one hand and a spear in the other, which is piercing a heart. It's an interesting design, but it appears to only be 100 years old, as it was actually first described in a magazine in 1912, with no evidence to suggest that it was ever used by Blackbeard. As far as contemporary accounts are concerned, there is a single description which appeared in a newspaper detailing an attack by Blackbeard's fleet on a merchant ship. It mentions there were 5 pirate vessels in total. 2 of them had black flags with death's heads on them, while the other 3 had bloody flags. Going by this information, it is possible that Blackbeard used the stereotypical skull and crossbones for his design. In the spring of 1718, Blackbeard had enough of the Caribbean and sailed back to America. Here, besides taking a few more prizes whenever the occasion presented itself, Teach embarked on his most brazen endeavor, blockading the city of Charlestown, South Carolina, today called Charleston. The pirates boarded and seized all of the ships that tried to enter or leave the port. One of those vessels, the Crowley, contained a lot of rich, prominent Charlestown citizens who were headed for London. Blackbeard took them as hostages and told the governor that if he didn't meet his demands, he would send the governor all their heads and burn down the ships that he had seized. Blackbeard's ransom demand was rather dull, but still practical. He wanted a chest full of medicine. He sent one of the hostages, Mr. Marks, and a few of his own men ashore and gave them 2 days to return before he started chopping off heads. Those days passed without response, but fortunately for everyone involved, the captain wasn't a premature decapitator. Blackbeard delayed his punishment long enough that Marks arrived with the medicine and explained that the reason why it took longer than expected was because the pirates got drunk in the city and couldn't be found. Blackbeard was content with this explanation and released all of his hostages safely, without their valuables, of course. From there, the pirate fleet moved on to North Carolina, where something bizarre happened at Beaufort Inlet. Blackbeard lost the Queen Anne's Revenge. Apparently, the intention was to careen it. Careening is the practice of grounding a ship intentionally at a high tide so that during low tide you can repair or clean the bottom of the hull that's normally underwater. However, the ship apparently went too far ashore and ran aground into a sandbar. They tried to use one of the sloops to tow the ship back to water, but that one ran aground as well, and both sustained too much damage to be usable again. Just like that, Blackbeard was left with only 2 sloops. This proved to be a real boon for modern archaeologists, as a search team found the wreckage of the Queen Anne's Revenge in 1996, and researchers have been studying and excavating it for over 2 decades. It wasn't until 2011 that it was conclusively identified as the flagship of Blackbeard the Pirate, but it did raise a question regarding how it got there. Losing 2 ships while careening would have been, even using the gentlest terms, a foolish mistake. Up until that point, Blackbeard had shown himself a capable captain. That is why some historians speculate that he may have done it on purpose in order to break up his crew. Next up, Teach went to Bath, North Carolina, and accepted the king's pardon, like Hornigold and many other comrades-in-arms. In an effort to curb piracy, King George I extended a one-time offer to pardon all pirates who surrendered willfully, with the promise that those who didn't, well, they'd be hunted down without mercy. Whether Blackbeard did this because he lost his flagship, or whether he ran the ships aground because this was his plan all along, we can't say. What we do know is that he became close friends with the North Carolina governor, Charles Eden, who not only gave Teach his pardon, but also a commission as a privateer aboard his remaining sloop, the Adventure. The pirate more or less continued his plundering ways, but now he had the approval of the governor, who most likely received a cut of the spoils. Eden may have been happy with Blackbeard prowling his waters, but the nearby governor of Virginia, Alexander Spotswood, was not. Some of the captain's former crew members had already begun causing trouble troubles in his territory, and having Blackbeard in the area severely put a hamper on local trade. He had little legal recourse against the pirates, but he didn't care. He wanted Blackbeard gone, one way or another. Technically, Spotswood commissioned two armed sloops to go and capture Teach for several acts of piracy, which he may have committed after the cutoff date for the pardon, which was on January the 5th. However, he did so knowing full well that this would most likely lead to a battle. The Virginia force was led by Lieutenant Robert Maynard, a man described by Captain Johnson as a gentleman of great bravery and resolution. On the morning of November the 22nd, 1718, the two sloops approached the Adventure in the channel, leading to Ocracoke Island, and engaged it in a fight. First came several volleys of cannon fire, which proved quite destructive to Maynard's forces and gave Blackbeard the advantage. This prompted the pirate to board the lieutenant's ship, but unbeknownst to him, he walked into an ambush. Maynard had ordered most of his men to hide below deck and trick the pirates into thinking they were severely outnumbered. As soon as Blackbeard and his cohorts were aboard, the British sailors pounced. According to Maynard's accounts, the fight lasted 6 minutes. Afterwards, the infamous Blackbeard lay dead after being shot 5 times and cut 20 times. The surviving pirates quickly gave up. Maynard had Blackbeard's head tied to his ship's bowsprit, while the rest of his remains were thrown in the water. That was the end of the world's most notorious pirate. It was somewhat fitting that Blackbeard died in battle and got sent to Davy Jones's locker instead of being hanged like most of his contemporaries. If anything, this violent end only helped increase the legend of Blackbeard, as evidenced by the fact that it's still going strong today.
So I really hope you enjoyed that episode. You listened all the way through, so hopefully you really liked it. If you did, why not go over to iTunes and leave us a review? It does make a huge difference. If you want it to be 5 stars, that is amazing, but give it whatever you felt we deserve. As always, I'll be back next time with another brand new episode, and thank you for listening.